Hail, cheers, and welcome to the Always Cheating Fantasy Premier League Podcast. My name is Josh. I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
I'm not bad, Josh. Like you said before we started, just two sick guys podcasting.
Yeah.
We went hard this weekend celebrating my birthday, which was a lot of fun. I think it definitely depleted, along with all the goals that were scored on Saturday, depleted our immune systems.
Yeah. I think we were both feeling a little something just separately. And then this really, it was a full day affair organized by your wife. It was pretty intense. We were actually talking about recording yesterday, and early in the morning, I messaged you and I was like, there's just no way I can record today. I need 24 hours to recover. and it turns out I really needed more like 72. I don't know. We're here though. We're staying consistent. We're recording this podcast
week to week. We got a question from Jeff Petter on our Patreon Slack channel. My question is just how rowdy was Brandon's birthday? Can you remember? Was there a theme? Details, cheaters. And I thought the theme was probably along the lines of Phil Bardsley, because I mean, no one needs to know how old I am, but I'm probably the Phil Bardsley of FPL podcasters.
I was surprised to find out today that Tom Heaton is older than Joe Hart. That was not anything that I did assume that Heaton was younger than Hart. Does that surprise you at all? Heaton's 32 and Hart is 31.
I don't know. It's like Joe Hart, you could chart the depletion of his hair over, you know, the many seasons. Right. And that seems to age him. But he's still, if you just look at his face, he's got a bit of a baby face. Whereas Tom Heaton, he does, I can see his age in his face. So I believe it.
All right, fair enough. No, but it was a good birthday party. It was a really awful weekend for me from an FPL perspective. I was feeling pretty darn low by the end of today's matches. And but so it goes. We're in week 5. We've got 33 weeks left in the season.
You're talking like we're in week 35, how low you are.
I lost 30 to 40 points on every one of my mini league rivals this week. That is a pretty low feeling. I mean, you know, often you have a bad week, but you know, usually it's not so extreme where, I mean, I finished on 54 points, which is not horrible by any stretch, but compared to almost everyone else in our mini league, is 70, 80, 94 in one case. You know, it's so it feels like if I don't make some right moves, like the season's kind of over. I mean, we've all seen this in our mini leagues. You know, someone jumps ahead 100 points and the season's kind of over, you know, and so I feel like I'm sort of dangerously close to that happening already. And so I feel like I really have to be extremely we're going to talk about this in the podcast, but extremely conscious of my moves moving forward. It's not that I'm not thinking about differentials. I'm not trying to be, I'm not going rogue or anything like that, but I just feel like if I'm not careful, the season's going to slip away before I even have a chance to sort of get my feet settled. So, I've got two transfers going into game week 6 and I still have my wild card. So it's not the end of the world, but, I do feel like I'm up against it a little bit.
It's slipping away, slipping away. I like your use of the word caution, and to tread with caution, we had a comment from FPL Assister. Do we all need to chill out and not make huge statements based on just one week? This week it's Hazard. Before that, it was a power back 3. Mane before that, I could go on, but you get the point. So, this week a slew of FPL content is going to hit your ears and your eyeballs. You're going to have a lot of decisions that you feel you have to make, but we're going to try and put it into context here. So we're going to talk about the midfield titans. Lots to say about Salah, Mane, and Hazard coming up. We're going to talk about all the fullback concern trolling. Of course, Josh, your year of the fullback, registered trademark. And Champions League is coming up, so talking a little bit about rotation. But before we get all that, let's talk about our game weeks in game week 5. You already mentioned your score for the week, Josh. Just pull the Band-Aid off. Tell us what happened, how it went down. So you didn't make any transfers. You saved.
The most frustrating thing for me was that I was all set to do a Matt Doherty. Eric Bailly has been sitting on my bench, and I've been trying to move him for a while. Not really trying, but just like it was like a move that had to happen soon. And going to this game week, I liked my starting 11, but I didn't really have any bench depth. And so I thought, well, do I make a move sort of for bench depth? And then maybe I move someone like Conte, who I, you know, really just shouldn't have in my squad to begin with and shouldn't have started.
What a moment that was, the Conte moment.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, I know you've been very sarcastic about it from the start, but there was a moment where it seemed like he really was going to be in it. The problem is he refuses to shoot. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I'd never seen a player who doesn't want to shoot more than Conte.
He's too nice.
It's amazing how often he's in the box and he immediately looks for someone to pass it out to. He really does not look confident in you know, his ability to actually score. So the move was, I was Baye to Doherty. What was really annoying about this is I actually didn't realize that Baye was set for another price drop. I had been in FPL statistics earlier that day and I somehow missed it. And if I'd known that he was going to price drop again, I actually would have dropped him. I put it out there like, oh, what do I do? And, you know, I know that like Twitter and our, you know, Patreons, a lot of people really like to put their teams out there and open it up for discussion. It's not something I love to do, to be honest, personally. Sure. I don't feel like, I just feel like I get too many responses and it sort of gets in my head a little. It doesn't help me. It actually just further muddies things for me a little bit.
Is it a little bit like there is a group of guys that is cool just hanging out with their shirts off, and then there is another group of guys that would just prefer to keep their shirts on?
Yeah, I prefer to keep my shirts on with my team. I don't mind sharing my team.
I want to see what you look like without your shirt on, that's no problem.
Sure, I'll unbutton it, you know. I got you know, the siren song of two transfers, you know, I got it in my head, but it was silly. I mean, so anyway, I ultimately decided not to make a move. Mendy gets injured and suddenly Cabaselli comes off my bench for 1 point. The following day, Doherty picks up, an assist, 3 bonus points and a clean sheet. Now I'm sure he's going to price rise. Bayes probably gonna continue to price drop. I might have other problems in my team now. And it was like, it was an 11-point mistake that's only going to get worse, you know? And it was just really, I just was really frustrated about that decision. Now, it's just one decision, and it's only 11 points. It's not the end of the world. But it was just, I talked myself into a bad decision by just listening to too many people and not having a clear sense of what I wanted to do. And honestly, I just feel like, you know, one of the rules that I've had this year is to be more conservative. And, you know, part of it is, it's okay, in my opinion, to make a transfer that does nothing more than shore up your bench. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. if the biggest problem in your team is the bench and you're like, you're starting 11, then fix your bench. Like, don't fall in love with 2 transfers, or don't fall in love with, you know, like, because especially if you have anyone from Manchester City, right? I mean, Pep just did not reveal that Mendy had a knee injury, right? Just straight up didn't tell anybody, you know, his press conference didn't come up, didn't come up at all by any of the insider
as
accounts
if he
there.
Has an axe to grind specifically with the FPL community. Right,
exactly. So it was just, you know, I mean, this is, so anytime you have a Pep player that they're at risk of just not even making the 18, I think you can feel the anguish in my voice, because I just feel like
I could have
done much better this week. It's frustrating.
Yeah, but just to boost you up, Josh, your game week rank was still like, I've had 2 worst game week ranks already this season. 1.5 million, not terrible.
Right,
you still
right.
have an overall rank around 150K. There's a lot you can do this season.
It's true. I actually, you know, I was one of those weeks that was so bad, I actually didn't even look at my overall rank until we fired up this podcast, because I couldn't bear to see. So yeah, I only fell 55,000 spots. Thank goodness for Josh King coming through with 11 and Zaha with 2 and Wan-Bissaka with 9. So those 3 really, really helped. And then Aguero obviously picked up his, you know, he's more of an assist player these days, apparently.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
He wants to see his teammates shine. It's all right, not all so about him.
Let's get into your wild card. You had a great, probably the best wild card you've ever had. Can I go that far?
I would say so. Historically, I believe your wild card team never really shakes out the first week you put it into motion. It always takes 2 or 3 weeks before your wild card players actually bring you back points. So yeah, I was kind of blown away. Finished on 84 points with the wild card, and it all revolved around Hazard. Now you start playing the FPL manager psycho game of, well, 84 just isn't good enough, because I should have had the foresight to put the armband on Hazard. but I did not. But no, I'm thrilled with the 84 points. So just to quickly run through how it shook out, I went for the Holy Trinity in the back with Alonzo, Robertson, and Mendy. Put Juan Bissaka first on my bench. So that was a great substitution for Mendy and really, I think, took me to new heights in this wild card. Patricio, I downgraded in goal. So Ederson finished on 7, but I downgraded to Patricio as my starting keeper. Matty Ryan, will I rotate him? It's just sort of, I don't know, it's like a bit of a security, expensive security blanket, a 4.5 bench keeper. I just know that I have a starting keeper there to jump in if I need him. So midfield really came through for me. I gambled on Fraser actually starting.
I was amazed. I mean, this, I think, you know, and you're up to what, 19,500 in the world now. So, you know, excellent, but I got to be your best start ever, right? To be in top 20K 5 weeks in.
Yeah,
but I think it indicates a newfound aggression in your game, which I feel like the old Brandon would not have brought in Fraser because of the like if I was on a wild card, I would not have brought him in, to be honest. I just would have been too worried about the hamstring risk.
We have a whole mini, and it's fitting that it's a mini section for Fraser because he is a small person. You must love Ryan Fraser.
I do, but not as much as you'd think. But yeah, I mean, I like that he's short.
Not after this week.
Not after this week. It's true. It's too personal right now.
It was a long term. The wild card. I wanted to be aggressive to a degree in bringing in Hazard specifically for game weeks 5 and 6. But Fraser, I think, is really unparalleled right now in terms of long-term value. I mean, right now he's risen up to 5.7 million, but going into game week 5, the price for the type of position he plays on Bournemouth, the attacking nature of that team, just long-term, I felt like I couldn't find a comparable player to Ryan Fraser. I was happy to just even put him on or have him slip to the bench in game week 5. So it was really never in doubt for me with him.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, and another regret is, you know, I could have brought in Fraser when I brought in Conte, and so yeah, maybe I'm a little biased against Fraser right now. I mean, he looked. I mean, it's the best I've ever seen him play. I mean, for a guy who was supposedly injured, that he was flying over the pitch, right? I mean, he could have done even more than he did. You know, he could have had like 25 points this game.
Well, to watch him run through the center of that defense, which is made up of Wes Morgan, which is doing his best Ashley Williams impression this season.
How is he still playing? Is Johnny Evans still injured? Wes Morgan, I mean, that red card was hilarious. I mean, that was just, what was he doing? It was just, it was like this.
It was just like a series of not one, not two, but three ill-timed tackles. Done that one on FIFA 18 many times.
It was grim. It was grim.
So I kept on Salah, and Pedro is my placeholder for Richarlison. So we're kind of on Pedro death watch right now, I feel. Right, that was a bit of a gamble looking at how good the fixtures are or game week 5 and 6.
Lord knows Pedro could have had 2 goals or more in that game.
Yeah,
I think I joked on Twitter that his BPS in that match was negative infinity. It was like in terms of missed chances. It was just,
he ended on four BPS in the system, which was half. To put it in context, 4 BPS was half of what Ross Barkley ended the match with. So
that's a good perspective. Exactly. All right. So that's our teams. The OSG and Super League, we've got some fresh blood, and we have a familiar face in there too, which is pretty exciting. So Brandon, let's why don't we run through the top 10?
Sure.
Take it away.
All right. Bottom to top, as we like to do. In 10th place, it's the little prince, Nikolai Zouglin, finished on 94 points. 9th place, Michael Byrne in Klopp We Trust, breaking the century mark with 108 points. 8th place, it's Luke Whaley Wildcats. 7th, it's Aurel Ravindran. Uruguay is the team name there. Moving up to 6th place, it's John McMahon. Never Neymar, team name there. 5th place, man, there's some tough ones in the top 10 today. This team name is The Bittered. Shane Cavini on 94 points. 4th place, some guy, Hello Always Cheatin' is his team name. That's some great branding that we didn't even pay for.
Yeah, thank you, Some Guy.
Some Guy finished on 84 points. Third place, it's Richard Inkvist, Patreon supporter. Love Vinyl Street
Richie
FC.
Himself. Yep.
The man, the myth. In second place, it's KT48 with 103 points. And in first place, Aaron McKinnon, Bian Arnautovic, 102 points on the week. And speaking of aggression, Andrew McKinnon's overall rank now 42 in the world. He captained Hazard, and that propelled him to 102 points. Dropped Salah and Mickey for a minus four to bring in Hazard and James Maddison. So
that is a minus four. Well played. Congratulations, everybody, in the top 10. Patreon thank yous. Brandon, we have a new Poku patron. That's Michael Arena. We also have two new Lord Sorloth patrons. By the way, there was nothing from IU in that match. Why is Sorloth not starting? I mean, give me a break.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Truly ridiculous.
Come on, get IU out of there. Come on, bring in the Sorloth. Sindri Tarford and Nico Seldivar, thank you to our newest Sorloth patrons. And then, Brandon, we have several new Mbakani patrons. Jason Macharano, Colin Williamson, Eric Kowalker, Daniel Masund, Matthew Hall, Antonio Yamanaka, Marco Pajic, Sean Harmon. I think that's how you say it. C-I-A-N right. in Italian.
You're Gaelic.
In Italian, no, excuse me, Irish. and Taylor here, thank you to all of you. He could be Italian, Brandon. It is offensive of you to assume that Sean Harmon is not Italian.
Yeah, we are men of the world. We are a global podcast, a global brand. We make no assumptions. All right, so as you sort of intoned earlier in the podcast, a fair number of rants this week. A lot of people did really well. Some people had some rants. Salam Uddin rants went minus four this week. Walcott and Trent out. Fraser and Robertson in. But Fraser on the bench because he might not play. And Trent gets a clean sheet. So this week sucks. David Geckel also with a rant. Why did I put Josh King as my second sub instead of my first? And why does Unai Emery hate FPL so much? I assume David's referencing Ozil and Xhaka bringing in the FPL points there, the goals.
Hey, Laka and Aubameyang both picked up their five. You know, their traditional five.
I enjoyed the new term that you coined on @HailCheaters, our Twitter account. You added me and said that I got trozled.
Yes.
Because I had ran with Ozil for the first 4 weeks of the season, and he finally scores his goal after I wild card him out. So.
And three bonus points, naturally. That was always the thing with Ozil, is, you know, when he had those great seasons, it was, you were just racking up the bonus points because he does, you know, all those things that the naked eye can't see, but that Opta does, apparently. I don't know. David, Juan Aguitos on the Slack says, you asked for deep thoughts. Here goes mine. Are we entering a postmodern FPL era with kings and generals at the bottom of the conventional hierarchies? What does this all mean? Is this FPL anarchy? Does the game need a new playbook? Will Silent King bring order to the chaos? Slightly smiling face. Would love to know your views. Cheers.
Wow, this is that is a deep thought for Rants of the Week. Will Kane and Salah, basically, this is we're right now in the Empire Strikes Back of FPL, and our heroes, Salah and Kane, are looking at the chaos of the galaxy, wondering if they can beat Darth Vader.
Right. And, played by Mesut Ozil. Right.
Kane is probably going to go out like Boba Fett did. Kane is probably going to fly into the Sarlacc pit. Salah.
It is sad. The Kane thing is, as a person who just enjoys watching Kane play, to watch this new sort of defensive midfielder version of him is so, like, he and Eric Dyer are like interchangeable right now. It's like Kane's like, he's still dangerous on set pieces, but that's about it. He just
really likes breaking up the play, Harry Kane.
I mean, obviously he's injured, right? I mean, clearly this is not full health Kane, right? I mean, you know, the guy won the Golden Boot, what, 2 years in a row, 3 years in a row? Finished second last year.
Are you counting World Cup Golden Boot as well? I'd say that's pretty good too.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, it's two goals and an assist in the season. It's not like a complete unmitigated disaster, but it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad.
All right, two more rants. This one from Dave Baker. It's kind of tongue-in-cheek rant. Salah to Hoiberg, bandwagon incoming. Right, so right. Sala out people yeah. are now, they found their replacement with Pierre Hjulberg.
Yeah, that was, I mean, I guess I'll take the blame here. On last week's podcast, I couldn't have been more, I guess we both were, we couldn't have been more adamant sure. to not bring in Pierre-Emile Højbjerg, right? Neither of us are believers in him. The fact that he has had, what, no goals and no assists to his name the first two seasons in the Premier League, and then finally scored a goal, we were like, it's a bandwagon, stay away from it. And then he scores a Kyle Walker-ish screamer. brilliant goal. I mean, on replay, it's like it bends like the Roberto Carlos goal. You know,
they reference this in the commentary, Cuco Martina, another Southampton player
who
also never scored another goal, as far as I remember, in his Southampton career. So I think we can stand by our hot take on Højbjerg.
Yeah, I mean, every year this happens. You know, this is like it's the who is the Watford midfielder who had that amazing season a couple years ago?
Etienne Capoue.
It's, you know, Etienne Capoue scored four goals in the first five games, and they were all like, I think every single one of them was some like kind of fluky outside the box goal, you know, like I don't think any one of the four was inside the box, maybe one like on a set piece or something. But it, like we all had him, you know, like, well, somehow he's doing it. And then of course he didn't do anything for like 30 weeks in a row. So let's just cool the, like cool your jets on the Højbjerg. I know Dave's kidding, but in general, let's cool the jets on the Højbjerg thing.
All right.
It's a fluke. I'm sticking by my guns.
In the rants section, we occasionally get some brags. And Elle Hardy, she holds true. There are no humble brags allowed on the Always Cheating podcast. So Elle comes in with a straight brag, which we do allow. Elle says, I scored 100. I allow it. I don't know about you. You stay no humble brags.
Every brag is a one game ban, one episode ban from the podcast.
All right, Elle, you're banned. But to make it worth your while, I will read this on the podcast. I scored 103 on Saturday and moved up almost 3 million places after a horrific start. Cool sunglasses emoji. So congratulations, Elle. You're officially banned for 1 week from the podcast.
All right, Brian, let's take a quick break and get right into the heart of the podcast, the meat of the podcast.
Mm. Beep, 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 beep.
All right, Brandon, part one of the podcast is really the topic that that I think everyone is considering right now. And, you know, I guess this is really where, you know, just seeing the sort of, you know, over the 2 weeks, it was just all, you know, all this talk about, we talked about him a ton on the podcast as well. And I mean, everybody else did too. I mean, it was, you know, what are you going to do with this guy? They've got great fixtures coming up. It looks like he's been kind of freed up a little bit, you know, within Sorry Ball.
Sure.
As, I'm into Sorry Ball as a term. What the hell? It doesn't make any sense, but sure. Let's go with it. And I was sticking to my guns. You and I actually talked a few nights ago, we had like somehow you and I had like two late night drunken nights, like in 3 days. Like, I don't know how that worked out. One was more of a solo affair before the birthday party. Yeah. And that one, I drunkenly confessed to you that maybe I was being, this is what we do. Of course, we just drink and then we just keep talking about FPL. And there's nothing else to discuss, right?
It gets a little emotional with the FPL talk.
I drunkenly confess that I may not have been giving the Hazard move enough credit, that it's, you know, that I had sort of, I started to see the logic of it. I think I was seeing it too much through the lens of my own perspective, and many others were in the same boat, I think, which is, you know, because I think, you know, I have Sadio Mane. I think maybe 20 to 25% of the league did, of the fantasy league, you know, the FPL did, going to the season. And if you have Mane and you get him at 9.5 million instead of 10 million, that's not an easy move to make. I mean, just because it's so hard to give up on all that value you've built up into him, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't really want to get rid of Salah still. I mean, God, the way people are talking about Salah now, it's like, what have you done for me lately? You know, it's like, guys, like unbelievable, you know, all of last season, the first 3 weeks of this season. And he like missed a shot, and it was like, there must have been 40 people on Twitter who like popped up to talk about what a fraud he was. And I did a lot of aggressive muting on Saturday, Brandon. I'll tell you that much.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I have to go back and like, I think I muted some accounts I actually like. So I'm going to have to go back and do a little unmuting.
People were later. Victimized by your bad game week score. Okay.
Well, yeah. I can't stand for any Salah bashing. I just don't give me it. Like, you know, the guy's allowed to have a bad little, you know, stretch.
Yeah, I mean, it's all new to us. It's foreign territory all right. Last season. We barely saw this man blank at all, and now we have two blanks in a row. So we're really coming to terms with that. A Waka Waka on Twitter says, drop Mane or Salah for Hazard, Mark Moore. Right. All Salah, stick with the Egyptian god or endure his hat trick wrath if you get rid of him. I mean, just can't let him go.
You got to watch these matches, too. I mean, you know, Salah could be on a brace after this weekend, right? I mean, if Sadio Mane doesn't play a very selfish game, in my opinion, and really not like his decision making was terrible in that match. And I like Mane, and I have him in my squad, but I felt like he had a really poor game. And I mean, they won, so I guess whatever. And he kind of had the assist for the Firmino goal, even though I didn't get credit for it. But I felt like it was one of those Sadio Mane games where he's just all over the pitch, making crazy decisions and, you know, kind of making up for them. And
his worst FPL decision was not him being selfish. It was when he decided to pass to Naby Keita instead of Salah
on the left instead of the right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I felt like the whole match he was just not really looking. Maybe there's something going on there. Maybe Mane and Salah got into like an argument or something.
I don't know. I think that is the real Sadio Mane. And I'm not saying that the real Sadio Mane is a bad footballer. He's still great. But I think Mane is reverting to form a little bit. And Salah is still sort of I'm still wondering where the goals are. And I think he's not quite at the form that he should be.
Yeah. So it's very tempting to do the Salah to Hazard move, which I could do pretty easily, having two transfers in my pocket to do. Or did I say, I'm sorry, Mane to Hazard, not Salah to Hazard.
Right.
Yeah. Honestly, it kind of feels like it may come down to tomorrow's Champions League match. And I mean, if Salah plays the full 90, there's probably a pretty good chance he doesn't play in that Southampton match this weekend. And maybe he goes or vice versa with my, I really have not decided what I'm going to do. And I'm probably going to wait till Friday. I'm just going to handle all of the points hits and all the points drops that might happen. So maybe Salah drops 0.1, maybe Hazard goes up 0.2. Maybe he goes up 0.3. It's possible. So far he's up only 0.1 though. Right. So I don't know. It's arguable. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, Lo Junan and FPL Boffin both mentioning the Southampton fixture at Anfield in game week 6. And this is a reason to, without a doubt, without any hesitation, stick at least one more week out with Salah. And that is captaincy material. And watching the Southampton-Brighton game, not the finest game to not the finest endorsement for the Premier League, but Southampton are ripe for the picking at Anfield. Well,
the problem is the concern is this nightmare scenario where Hazard, Hazard plays away to West Ham, which is, God knows it's a great fixture for him. I mean, West Ham is not impressed defensively and so Hazard plays, let's say he doesn't play in the Europa League, which I think is probably likely. Then he plays away in a week's rest, and maybe Salah and Mane are both rested at home to the Southampton match, which they should be able to win very easily, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why they brought in guys like Shaqiri to play in those matches. So suddenly, I hold on to those two guys. I'm not going to move both of them, but let's say I move one of them. And they get a one pointer and Hazard gets another 16 points or something, mm-hmm. It's like that just like the thought of that is just like terrifying, Yeah. And so that's almost more terrifying to me than the thought of them going off on Southampton at home because, I don't know. It really just depends on how they look tomorrow. But it's really going to come down to the wire for me. Not that I did look at everything through my own perspective, but, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I know a lot of, I guess the question is, if you only have Salah, mm-hmm. right, and you don't have Hazard, do you move Salah to Hazard?
Right. Like, because if you're looking at your next most expensive midfielder could maybe be David Silva or
Right.
I'm trying to think of even expensive midfielders who have taken off this season, apart from Mane. So it requires a minor amount of surgery to turn David Silva into Hazard. So therefore, Salah is just the easiest way there. And I think a lot of people are trying to will Salah to be a guy that we don't need to have just so they can make the decision a little easier. I mean, I would kind of just encourage people to consider triggering their wild card for this. It is a wild card worthy situation for me. What's going on with Hazard? We've got a couple questions, Ryan Dika, who asks, is it too late to jump on the Hazard bandwagon? You're not feeling like this is just a passing fad with Hazard. This is something worth kind of moving a lot of pieces around. And
it's not like he's never done it before. I mean, you know, this happens with Hazard, you know, every season or maybe sometimes twice a season where he has these runs where he scores an unbelievable number of goals and picks up assists and, you know, usually has a couple penalties in there. And then he'll go 8 weeks where he's like very indifferent. But when these runs happen, they last for 4 or 5 weeks and they're extremely explosive, you know, right? And your season can be won and lost and whether you pick up in time. And honestly, a lot of us got by pretty easy at the start, right? Because he's been doing this basically from the start of the year. But his ownership wasn't quite that high. And it's really only recently that it's really hurt you if he does well, you know? Mm-hmm. And I mean, his ownership is still only up to 28%. And that's after a ton of buys in the last couple of weeks. But you know, I mean, he picked up 11, I guess he only picked up 8 in the Newcastle game, but 11 in the Bournemouth game. And those weren't killers, but the, you know, then the 20, I think even then he was probably only around 20% ownership. So it was a massive differential for people who had him then. And, you know, as I've said many times before in the podcast, you know, a differential, you know, that is someone that is performing really well, that isn't highly owned, is only a differential for about 2 weeks, right? Because then they just become a player that everybody has, you know, like no one has a differential for 12 weeks who just like is awesome. Right. Like it's not like the secret player that no one's talking about. It's like, if they do well, everyone knows about it and everybody wants to bring them in.
Yeah.
That's where we are really is. So I guess if I were to answer the question I posed to you, I think that I would, consider moving, Salah. And I guess it's a 1 week. I feel slightly hypocritical about this because I was very adamant about not doing it last week. But I mean, I guess the other factor here is that you free up an extra 2.2 million if you make the move. And their fixtures are so good. And, you know, I just think that maybe, given their form, if Salah were like he was last season, where, you know, I think his starting price was 9.5 billion mm-hmm. and he went up about 1.3 million over the first, you know, 10 weeks or so. I mean, everybody had him by, you know, game week 10 or 11 last year. Then it really was a tricky decision because you were giving up so much value that you built up. But in this case, he's at 13. He's probably going to drop, you know? And so, you know, it's not going to be impossible to bring him back in.
Yeah. I was really like hoping that he would drop while I was on my wild card so I could sell him because I had dropped him in my wild carding and then brought him back in at 13. I was kind of hoping I could get him at 12.9, but not to be. Yeah, I would be shocked if he didn't drop this week.
Right. I forgot you still have him. So, I mean.
I do. So, not that it's doing me any good right now.
Yeah, but I mean, you're not considered dropping him now, right? If you've got
not at all. It's like you with Salah and Mane, and having two big hitters like that. So me sitting with Salah and Hazard, there is a great amount of flexibility there, and I do fear if you move to a model in which you've got like Fraser, Maddison, David Silva, and Hazard. Moving away from having two big, expensive, heavy hitters, I feel like I'm losing a little bit of flexibility because it's not like I want to put a bunch of money up front in my strike force. And you've probably already invested the way you intend to invest in your defense right now. So, that scares me, sort of moving a lot of money out of the midfield for fear of lack of flexibility.
Yeah. And I guess the other question here is, you know, what happens with Sergio Aguero? I mean, is he okay? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, because that's 12.5 million that, you know, I mean, let's say he's not okay. I mean, you know, we'll know more in a couple of days. And, you know, if you're listening to this on Friday and it's already out, you know, feel free to skip ahead like 90 seconds. But if, let's say he's out for a month, you know, unlikely though it may be. Let's say he's just out for, you know, but you never know, right? Let's say he's out for a month. Then the move could be to move Aguero to somebody cheap like Mitrovic, right? And then you just have like an entire, like a whole cheapy front line. And then that's like an extra 4.5 million. And I could just upgrade, you know, Lucas Moura to Eden Hazard. And then I could have a ridiculous trilogy of Mane, Salah, and Hazard. You know, so I don't know. There's lots of different ways to do it. I don't think there's one like clear and easy move. And I think that having like Frazier as a possible enabler is maybe the way to do it, because yeah. I think that you could free up some, you know, downgrade Lucas Moura to Frazier. That's going to give you 1.4, 1.5 million thereabouts. You know, and then that's enough money to take to move Mane to Hazard pretty easily. So, you know, just different ways to do it. All right, let's move on to fullbacks, Brandon.
Yeah, fullback. We have to do some concern trolling here. The holy trinity of Mendy, Robertson, and Alonso, they all blanked. So what? Does this mean anything? And the big concern seems to be around Mendy because he's yellow flagged. It's kind of a mysterious injury. There's not a lot of information there. I think we'll know, obviously, a lot more looking at the UEFA lineups midweek and more press conferences leading into the weekend. So it's hard for us to recommend any real thing to do with Mendy at the moment. But goes back to the point from FPL Assister earlier. We don't need to make any huge sweeping judgments based on this one game week. So we didn't suddenly move from the year of the fullback to the year of Doherty and Duffy, as much as I love Irish people.
Sure. Yeah.
So I'm not freaked out at all. And Alonso he had kind of a bouncy around assist at the end of that match that, I think rightfully he wasn't credited with. So it's not like Alonso wasn't doing his Alonso thing. Robertson was still doing his Robertson thing, played a beautiful ball to initially set up the first Liverpool goal. Right. It's just so happens he didn't get an attacking return. And I mean, you expected the clean sheet against Spurs to get wiped out. Mendy is the big question mark with the injury. So all that to say is I'm still happy to be wildly overinvested in my defensive back line.
Yeah, I mean, it's all pretty explainable. I mean, the Mendy injury, like if he plays, I'm sure he does really well. Robertson had about as tough fixtures are going to have right away to Spurs, and especially coming out of international break, right? It's just like those are always kind of strange game weeks. And then Alonso, I mean, they conceded a goal on a set piece, you know, like that's going to happen. That happens all the time, you know. Even good defenses concede goals on set pieces, right? It's just like the ball bounces just the right way, it hits the right forehead, you know. So I don't feel like anything has really changed, except as you said with Alonso. But I mean, as Rick Cito says, you know, I'm holding. You know, we need to wait for more info, and I agree, right? Yeah. I mean, you know, it's so let's see what we find out. I mean, even if he was definitely not playing this coming weekend, it still wouldn't be enough for me to move him. I would need to know that he was out for a good. How long would I hold on to Mendy for? If he was out for 2 weeks, I would hold, right? Uh-huh. I would see it as a Richarlison situation and just wait it out. It was like a 3 weeks. If it was 2 to 4, closer to a month, I think then I would definitely drop him.
Now, what do you think about this? So Timmy Two-Tone, he says, as a City's fan, I think Mendy is a big question mark, even with only a minor knock, now that Sané has gotten a sniff. And Timmy goes on to mention that Pep doesn't think that Mendy or Sané can play together in the same team. So the fact that Sané starts and scores a goal, does this suddenly mean that Mendy is now on the outside looking in? And I think Sané was doing his Sané thing. I still think that City have looked much stronger the first 4 weeks of the season with Mendy playing. So I don't think that Sané coming along scoring a goal suddenly makes Mendy a little more of a risk.
No, I don't think so either. I think, Mendy will be right back in the squad as soon as he's healthy. But, I mean, it was good for, I read an interesting, I can't remember where I read it now, but just a really damning article about Sané and his kind of approach to the game and how it was somebody, it was Toni Kroos, his German teammate, who said that he has the same body language, whether they're winning or losing. You can't tell by looking at him whether you're winning or losing the match. And then there's just he kind of gives off an indifferent vibe. I don't know anything about him. Someone pointed out that it's kind of strange that his tattoo on the back of himself is a tattoo of him scoring a goal in a losing match. Mm-hmm. So there maybe is like, I don't, you know, these all seem kind of petty when, you know, but maybe together they add up to a player who maybe isn't quite as, but he's so young too. I mean, it feels weird to sort of get down on someone for not being a consummate professional when they're, you know, when I was still a junior in college at that time. And,
yeah,
and God knows I was not consummate or a professional, Brandon, in any way at all.
All right. So I just wanted to talk about Champions League real quick since group stages start up this week. So tomorrow, I guess it's Tuesday, Spurs are away to Inter, and Liverpool host PSG at Anfield also on Tuesday. Two huge matches. So we'll watch that rotation with great interest. How much does Salah play? How much does Mane play? Does Shaqiri come in? And then on Wednesday, City and Manchester United both play. City is at home to Lyon and Manchester United away in Switzerland to Young Boys. So, I mean, just words of the wise. I mean, we always post our podcast early in the week. We do trust you, the listener, to take everything we say and apply it to news that breaks because of Champions League lineups, injuries, rotation, form, and so on and so forth. So just good for us to point that out in case you're new to FPL and you want to take that into consideration. Josh, so you've got two transfers to make, and you were telling me there's not a chance that you make any moves until you see the outcome of these UEFA fixtures.
Oh, for sure. I mean, given the like, you know, how expensive these players are, they're like, and just how important they are to my team, I can't make some smaller move just because of a 0.1 price rise or a 0.1 price drop. You just have to wait until these are over because, you know, it's just too risky. And also you gotta look at the minutes that are being managed, and you know, it just tells you a lot about how healthy people are, right? I mean, if Aguero is in the 18, even if he doesn't start at midweek, then that means it's probably fine, right? And, you know, same with Mendy for that matter. If I don't know, let's, you know, if Salah doesn't start at midweek, then there's no way I'm going to drop him, right? Because it seems extremely likely he's going to play in the Southampton game. You know, so it's kind of interesting, actually. There was I read the Klopp's press conference over the, you know, before the weekend started, and he was talking about how this idea that managers always sort of have a plan for like the next three matches. He says it's like kind of overstated, because you really just every time a match is over, you evaluate where your players are, mm-hmm. and who needs the rest. Who's, you know, so it's not always this. Yeah, actually, Pep seems like the kind of guy who knows what he's doing like into December. But I think in general, I think
he has a bullet journal.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I heard that, like, you know, Trippier, for example, is apparently not traveling with Spurs, for their Champions League match with Inter. And, which at first was kind of surprising. And then it was like, well, he must have just wore himself out, right? In the Liverpool game. Yeah. He needs the rest. And so, or he just, you know, they can't play him three times in a week.
It's not like a crippling fear of flying. That's not the reason.
It could be. So yeah, maybe he has like he has crippling vertigo or something.
we have to also chime in. Chelsea do have a big Europa League campaign that kicks off on Thursday.
Well, let's say Europa League campaign.
It's just a full stop Europa League campaign. So. Does Hazard travel? What kind of is this just going to be the Ross Barkley All Stars that play against PAOK?
Yeah. I mean, I think if you've got 15 from five, you know, five wins in a row, decent chance of winning the league this year. I just don't know why you're putting any energy into the Europa League, right? They could win the league this year. I mean, it's not likely, maybe, but it's possible.
It is possible. It's at least more likely that they get into Champions League by finishing top four in the league than winning Europa. And that,
right.
That's just a bit of a gauntlet.
Yeah.
But
we saw this with Conte 2 years ago, too. You know, there's like, well, there's no way Chelsea is going to win the league. You know, this is like it's a team in transition. They finished 10th the year before. But it's that kind of magic mix of having a really talented team that disappointed the year before. So you don't have Champions League at the middle of the week, you know, and you just have that little extra rest. And I'm not saying that I think Chelsea's going to win the league, but I mean, I'd be surprised if they weren't still contending for it. And, you know, the game week 34 or something like that.
All right. So let's take a break, Josh. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about the wee midfield titans, the Fraziers, the Richarlisons, the Madisons of the world. Then we have a lightning round before our game week 6 preview.
Let's do it.
All right, let's take a minute for our good friends at Starting 11. If FPL has you stressed out, Josh, you seem a little stressed out.
I do. I am.
Yeah, so let's mix it up a little bit. Take your FPL brain and apply it to Starting 11, which you can play daily fantasy for cash prizes. Starting 11 is an app for your iOS or Android phone. Cash games are live in the UK, US, Canada, and Germany for your iPhone. And free games are now available everywhere on Android. Cash games are coming soon. So go to your iOS App Store or the Google Play Store to download Starting 11 today. What is it? It is daily fantasy. Play it any day in which there are two or more Premier League matches happening. You can set a squad with no budget limitations, adjust your lineups right up until kickoff. So when those team sheets are announced, you're not left kicking yourself or putting Josh King second on your bench. You've got three live in-game substitutions. So as the game is playing, you can bring in new players to keep up with the action as if you're the manager on the sideline, or if you feel like you need to get an edge on whoever you're challenging for cash through the app, you can affect the game in real time. Also, mini leagues are coming soon. So the way Starting 11 works is you can jump into cash games with strangers. You can challenge your friends for free or for cash. And soon you'll be able to set up mini leagues. And once that happens, we're going to have an always cheating Starting 11 mini league. So yeah, download the app. Just visit starting11.io for more information or your favorite app store today.
Brandon, we will see them and us. We'll all be there playing Starting 11. We'll see you there in the future. You'll see us there. We'll see you first, maybe.
Amazing. All right, Josh, this is technically part three of the podcast, and it works really nicely because there are three primary suspects in this section, the midfield mini titans. It's Fraser, it's Madison, and it's Richarlison. So Madison and Fraser are kind of players of the moment that everyone's talking about. Madison has looked sharp. He scored the penalty. And then Richarlison, he enters into this discussion because he's just coming back from suspension. He was a really key player before his red card, but he's coming back with an away fixture to Arsenal. Perhaps not. Well, I don't know. That it's debatable what kind of fixture that is for Richarlison. So maybe you hold fire on him until game week 7 when they host Fulham, which has a very leaky defense. So let's tackle these three midfielders, where we should be if we're FPL managers right now who may have one and not the other. So how are you feeling about Fraser, first and foremost? Because you don't know.
Yeah. Well, I think we've always been very positive about Fraser on the podcast so far this season. I mean, he's on set pieces. He's been kind of the attacking fulcrum of the team on the opening weeks. I mean, it's just a year later than we expected this to happen. I mean, he started to show this last year. And is he playing a little more centrally this year? Am I wrong in thinking that? Was he further out wide in the past? And
Yeah, I think he typically was more on the wing. Maybe it's like so. Begovic comes out and wildly says that he thinks that King, Wilson, and Fraser are right up there with Liverpool's front three. And of course, that's kind of a ridiculous thing to say, as good as Bournemouth's attack has been this season. But
right.
What I think that points to is now these guys are a little more comfortable with each other. Fraser has been fully in brought into first team football at Bournemouth. Mm-hmm. I think he is enjoying a little more freedom. And to see him make those darting runs down the middle, the overlapping runs is interesting. I think there's a little more to him this time around.
Yeah, I think so too. And I mean, you know, if he really did have a hamstring injury, it's amazing how well he played in that match. I guess it was just a little tightness and he was fine. But
it's like him, guys like him and Aguero who are tiny but have these giant tree trunk legs. I feel like they right. are very susceptible to these little twinges in their hamstring.
Right. That they have to yeah, because you've got to be so strong, right? To fight. So I think. Yeah, I mean, do I think he can do what he did in that match again? Probably not. But, I mean, you know, how much do you need from him, though? I mean, at $5.5 million, if he's going to average, you know, an assist and a goal every – let's say he gets one goal and one assist every three matches. Yeah. So maybe that's a little high. It's one goal and one assist every four matches. And throw in a few bonus points too. I mean, like, you know, if he's averaging like 16, if he's averaging 4 points a game at $5.5 million, that's a fantastic return. You know, and I think he's definitely capable of that. So, he's also just a nice enabler. I mean, if you're trying to free up money, if you want to keep, I mean, it's kind of like if you want a team like your wildcard team, Brandon, where you want to keep Salah and Hazard and bring in Hazard, he's a perfect enabler for that because you feel confident that he's going to start matches. And you like him as a, I mean, and the fixtures are good too. I mean, there's really no reason. I feel like we don't have to beat around the bush here too much because we both like him and we like Bournemouth's fixtures. And I mean, Bournemouth play a style of play that lends itself to goals. I mean, that's why, you know, I really didn't feel any hesitation about keeping the faith with Josh King because I knew that the fixtures were good. And, you know, I've been rewarded with, you know, two goals, assist, and five bonus points in the last three matches from him. So, you definitely have to just stay a little patient with some of these cheaper players. I mean, you know, it's possible that he blanks the next game week, but that shouldn't bother you too much because he's 5.5 million or 5.6, you know, whatever he is now.
Yeah, for sure. He's very much like a square peg that goes into a square hole. It just works. He's like a perfect FPL player. And a Bayern Brew on our Slack says, Ryan Fraser, is he Riyad Mahrez or Etienne Capoue? So they broke the mold with Riyad Mahrez that first season at Leicester. I appreciate the way you're speaking about Fraser in a very tempered sort of way. Because, yeah, I don't want to get too rolled over by him scoring a brace. He's not going to do that every week. And I do still wonder what's going to go on.
I think the comparison is Robert Snodgrass like 3 years ago. Remember when Snodgrass had that amazing season?
Was that for Hull City?
Well, yeah, it was for Hull. The Snod is God year. Sure. As our friend Guy Yedweb, our Poku supporter, Guy Yedweb says, but like, Snodgrass was just unbelievable that year because he was right around the same price point as Fraser is. I think he was maybe 5.5 million, and it was just he was on set pieces and he was kind of the attacking fulcrum of the team. And, and you know, if you didn't get anything from one game, I'd rather have him than Pedro. Right. Or probably
why not have both, Josh? Why not have both?
I know. See, there's so much. It's very hard, you know, 2 days after this stuff to not be totally like, what have you done for me lately? You know, I mean, I don't know. I actually think I'd probably prefer Lucas Moura over Fraser long term. But yeah, I mean, given the 1.7 million price difference, maybe I do actually prefer Fraser.
Yeah. So Jürgen Rockvog says, he coins this term, the Fraser wagon. Is the Fraser wagon worth it? Can you name any other bandwagon it's good now to be on? So you brought up Pedro and that then leads me right into James Maddison. So I have Pedro and he was brought in as a placeholder for eventually bringing Richarlison back in.
Right.
Richarlison 6.6, Pedro now 6.8. So that all checks out. But my issue with Pedro and why I'm very eager to get rid of him is it sort of feels like an oscillating fan. Like you want Pedro for the match that he starts. And right now, it does feel like every other match you could see him get rotated, particularly when Willian comes on and puts on a scoring clinic the way he did. So that is a bit of a concern. So maybe I just want to immediately throw my hat in with James Maddison. Continues to look great. As I mentioned, he scored that penalty. Ishan Ghosh says, is Richarlison? Yes, I kept him to Maddison. Advisable this week, given Leicester's next two are Huddersfield at home and Newcastle away. So what are you thinking about Leicester City right now and Maddison's prospects?
Yeah, well, we talked a little bit about him last week. I mean, as this sort of poor man's Christian Eriksen. And I mean, I guess I still feel the same way after this fixture, right? I mean, I don't think he's on pens when Vardy is on the pitch still, but, you know, he did pick a penalty and he did pick up a bonus point in a game they lost 4-1. So I think that tells you something about, you know, how involved he is on the pitch. You know, I mean, he's like a kind of player who can get attacking returns and he's going to get rewarded with bonus points when he gets them.
It was 4-2, Josh. Don't forget the weird Mark Albrighton scoring a headed goal in the middle of like.
I was so ready for people to start getting on me because I was so negative about the Bournemouth defense all week, and I was like, oh God, here it comes. And then nope, there's two quick conceded goals just to prove how crap they are.
So Ishan's question is interesting to me because he's stuck with Richarlison through this entire red card ban, and now he's thinking of moving him to Maddison. So no, here we are now with Richarlison. I feel like if you've waited this long, you have to keep him. Tacoma Toffee says Richarlison back in straight away or wait and see. Sankar is the returning Richarlison straight back in.
Brandon, if I could go, if gambling were allowable in the U.S., which it kind of is now, I don't know, like eventually it will be, I would totally go to a Ladbrokes or whatever and make a bet on Richarlison scoring away to Arsenal this week. That guy is definitely going to score away to Arsenal. I feel it in my bones.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be a game time decision for me. Pedro is turning into one of these players of the moment. It's just a matter of who, Maddison or Richarlison. All right, Josh. So those are our mini midfield titans. This leaves us some room for a quick lightning round, 30 seconds or less questions before we get to the Game Week 6 preview.
Okay.
I will ask you the first question. Give me the 100% correct answer in 30 seconds or less. Mike DiPietro, he asks, I know this gets asked often, but if I can make all the changes I want at a -8, should I hold my wild card or use it? Too many players I feel like I have to bring in, Fraser, Hazard, Mitrovic, etc. So you're faced with the prospect of burning -8 to get your team to a point where you're totally happy with it.
Right.
Or trigger the wild card.
I would probably just use the wild card. I don't know. -8 feels like a lot. And it's going to take a long time to recoup that. It's like, I know like the wild card is like the bird in the hand and like, you never, but I just feel like I would just use the wild card. I mean, how many transfers do you feel like you need to make in order to justify using a wild card? And I think it's like 4, I'd say. So maybe he's one short. I don't know. I feel but then like once you make those 3 that you really need to make or feel like you need to make, there's probably another 3 or 4 that you could make in your squad as well. Right.
Definitely. This leads into the next lightning round question from Vinyl Richie on our Slack. Might have to look at wildcarding from a position of strength, which is a term that is used by some of the Scoutcast guys. So there, this idea that maybe Mike only has to make a -8 worth of changes, but maybe that means he's actually in a position of strength and could benefit a lot from a wildcard to make those changes that he wouldn't think to change.
I would probably just wild card if I were in his position. I'm not really considering it myself. I still like my team fundamentally. I feel like, especially with the 2 transfers, I feel like I can get it close to where it needs to be. But yeah, I mean, the question about whether like where are the next like big sort of runs of good fixtures coming from, that's an interesting question, I think.
Yeah, Vinyl Richie goes on to ask if there's a big fixture swing that would make sense for people who still have their wild card. When is the natural point in which, what are you waiting for, Josh?
Well, I mean,
I'm not saying that I'm not pointing at you and saying you have. Why haven't you in particular? But
well, I mean, the idea of having a wild card in game week 14 or something, you know, when everybody like hates their team and there's like a rash of injuries is incredibly appealing. I mean, yeah, it hurt me this week not to play it, I guess, or not to bring in Hazard. But having a wild card is a super valuable chip. And, you know, so, I mean, you know, some of the teams that have good fixtures coming up, I mean, one of them is obvious, right, because their fixtures have been so bad for a while. It's Newcastle. And I think there's a lot of value in Newcastle, a ton of cheap players, a ton of interesting options. And we sort of treated them like they don't exist, you know, the first 5 weeks of the season. You know, Leicester have a great run, too. I mean, I'm looking, you know, just I'm looking through game week 14 right now. I mean, they have maybe one bad fixture and a run from game week 6 to 14. You know, I think even Man United have a pretty good run of fixtures. I mean, we haven't talked about Lukaku at all, but, you know, if Aguero's injured, then Aguero to Lukaku is a very interesting move. You know, I mean, they play Wolverhampton, West Ham, and Newcastle in their next three. You know, if you wanted to be a little different, it's risky because, I mean, you know, Man City still has some really good fixtures too. You know, not having, you know, Aguero, if he starts at home to Brighton or something like that, in game week 7 is a pretty scary prospect, but, yeah. So I think there's a few, you know, Burnley have a pretty decent run of fixtures coming up too.
Yeah. I'm looking at game week eight in particular. Watford are coming off the back in game week 8 of Fulham and Arsenal away, and they host Bournemouth at home. It's Bournemouth, Wolverhampton, Huddersfield, Newcastle, Southampton. It's a decent run for Watford. At the same time in game week 8, Brighton come off of their Man City away fixture to host West Ham, and then they have a decent run. So it's decent attack with Watford and decent defense with Brighton. And I guess that's the way I'd look at the fixtures turning, is looking at the marginal teams, the mid to lower mm-hmm. table teams, the value teams like Newcastle, right. As you say.
That's where true.
The fixtures really don't matter with those big hitters that we're talking about. It's the smaller guys.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, that's why that's one of the reasons I kept the faith with Liverpool. I mean, God, you know, Liverpool had their chances in that game. It was frustrating to get blanks from Mane and Salah, but that's a rare thing and not something I expect to happen, you know, too frequently. All right, I'll answer the next question. One word answer: Zaha or Mitrovic? This comes from Nick.
This is a tough one to answer after this game week when Zaha just scored a sensational individual goal and Mitrovic just had no supply whatsoever against a rampant City. And Fulham looked like they kind of didn't want to be there. They looked ill prepared. They looked really slow.
I did say one word answer, Brandon.
So based on what I just said, I'm going to go ahead and say Mitrovic. I am keeping the faith with Fulham. I think their attack is really strong. Mitrovic did manage to get a shot off, at least against City that was on target.
Yeah, I would definitely go with Mitrovic as well. I mean, Zaha just doesn't get it. There's no one to feed him the ball. He has to do it all himself. This is the biggest problem. They have no attacking midfield. I mean, it's just maybe if Max Meyer starts to come into the fore more or something. But I mean, right now it's just him doing these long runs and Andros Townsend isn't helping him at all. And anyway, I'm saying Mitrovic as well. Sadat says, if the Aguero injury ends up being more serious, would you swap him out for someone like Lukaku or go for someone cheap like a Vardy or Zaha? It's a good question.
Going back to what I was saying earlier about keeping money sort of strategically placed, be it in your defense or your midfield or up front, I worry if you downgrade Aguero to a cheap striker, where are you putting that money? And if you then need to get a premium striker like Lukaku becomes essential or you need Aguero back, how straightforward is that going to be? And I think a like for like with Aguero to Lukaku, you're looking at Manchester United's fixtures right now. It's Wolves, West Ham, Newcastle in the next three. Lukaku's on form. I like that move. I like Lukaku better than trying to strike it rich with a more value striker, which you probably have elsewhere in your front three.
Yeah. Just a hard question to answer before we know what the extent of the Aguero situation is.
Well, what do you think about Lukaku right now, just while we're talking about it? Because I think he's one that's starting to build a little bandwagon steam.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like the Hazard thing, you know, except it's on a team that doesn't play as much of an attacking style. So, I mean, you know, It's like Hazard, I'm still wary of, but like you said earlier, they've opened up that team a lot, and it feels like it's created a lot of chances for him. You know, Lukaku is a great forward and plays a ton of minutes, but can really drift out of games and doesn't really seem like he's enjoying himself a lot. And I'm not sure if that matters, but he's not a fun player to have. I think maybe that's a factor too. Like, I don't enjoy having Lukaku on my team. I don't know. I liked it more when he was at Everton. You know, maybe it's just part of it. I don't dislike Man United, but it's just kind of a, I don't know. It just, now it's like he's just part of the, it just seems like he's like a rich guy who, you know, has all the trappings and doesn't. I just wish he celebrated more. I hate that he doesn't celebrate. It just drives me crazy. It's like, this is a sport. It is supposed to be fun. Like, we are all like, we're playing sports and we take it. I mean, like, we have this podcast where we take it seriously. It's, I know it's sort of mock seriously, but like, we're having fun though. Like, and this guy is like being paid so much money, and you know, he's going to have $200 million and retire at 34 and can do anything he wants or never work again. Like, who cares? Like, what are you so angry about? I just, like, I wish he would just like lighten up, and it makes me dislike him, and it probably biases me against him as a player.
It's
a
his,
bit
it's his game face, Josh. It's his game face. He's just competitive. You can sympathize with that.
Yeah, but even, there are very competitive players, Brandon, in all of these leagues who do celebrate when they score goals and don't make it seem killed an intergalactic kitten or whatever.
Well, he doesn't kill the kitten. He sends them to an intergalactic prison. Right. I mean, it's a sentence worse than death, let's be honest. An interesting comparison is Arnautovic. So he looks quite grim, but he's very emphatic in his celebrations. He's doing like the Irons West Ham sign and ripping at his badge, but he's not smiling. He's not happy.
Yeah, but that's Lukaku, like when he scores, he like starts to cry a little bit. He sort of kicks the dirt in front of him like Charlie Brown. I mean, this guy really doesn't like to score goals.
Yeah. All right. I think you can answer this with a one word answer. Eldo Calderon, what do you think of bringing in Tompkins if you already have Wan-Bissaka? So would you double up on Palace defense?
Yes.
Assuming you would. Okay.
Sure. Yeah. Did you think I was going to say no? I think you can. I think their defense is pretty good. And their fixtures are good too.
The only thing that gives me pause is how many other – I was doubled up with AWB and Tompkins in game week one, and it was good. Like, Palace defense does look great when Tompkins and Sacco are in the middle. However, going into game week six, like, we were talking about Doherty, and I think we could – and Duffy is come,
sure,
come to
there
bear.
Are other, there are other there options, are other options. But yes, but I wouldn't – I don't think it's a bad move.
Yeah. Okay. Next one. Mike Mulcahy, West Ham, Everton. Is your Malenko an add to the watch list, or was this game a reminder that Everton can't defend, or both? I mean, when I saw Everton's central defensive lineup with Holgate and
I wanted Arnie in my team so bad. I think he's one to watch. I mean, you know, their fixtures aren't great. You know, they play Chelsea, Man United, and Spurs in three of their next four. So that's not fantastic. Now, all three of those are at home. So I guess that does soften the blow a little bit, although, you know, it's questionable whether they really have a strong home advantage of their new stadium. So I think he's interesting. He scored in the internationals as well, so he's clearly, you know, in some form right now. But no, I wouldn't be looking at him yet. I don't know that I trust that team, especially if Arnautovic is injured. You know, then definitely not.
Yeah, that's like ripping the beating heart out of that attack.
M. Bison says, does Josh think that Walcott will wither and cower again as he goes back to the Emirates? Is it safe to bench him? Now, this is a reference to last season when I predicted, in spite of some serious form at the time, that he would make a complete ass of himself away to Arsenal on his return, which proved to be the case. And I think he slunk off around the 72nd minute or something like that. I mean, you know, I don't hate Theo, but like, you know, he's kind of a flat track bully, right? We all know that.
He's kind of a no-track bully. He's kind of a flat-track nice guy at the moment.
I think you can safely bench Theo going into this weekend, or possibly just transfer him out.
Another Arsenal question from Vale. Could Ozil be a differential in the next 4 to 5 matches?
No, don't even finish a sentence. No.
I can't believe I put this in the running order.
No way. Anshu Mishra, who should I take out first between Mickey, Pedro, or Bernardo Silva? And who should I bring in first, Madison or Frazier? This is a quick one, Brandon. Quick answer.
Yeah, soon. Mickey out for Frazier, and I think that's just a good value proposition. Frazier's going to be skyrocketing in value this week.
Yeah, and then I go Pedro to Madison from there. Yeah. Tawig Al-Sharif says, should I play Perea instead of Frazier?
Okay, this is kind of jumping ahead to our game week 6 preview. It's like Watford are at Craven Cottage and Bournemouth are at Turf Moor. So does that make you reconsider your answer?
Nope.
Yep.
you gotta play Frazier right now. I mean, given this form.
Scorching hot form. Yeah. Eric Medbo on the Slack. Ings or Jimenez for the next 3 to 4 matches, of course, with a note that Ings cannot play against Liverpool in game week 6.
Right. I guess that moves you into the Jimenez category, doesn't it? I mean, I don't trust Jimenez. Jimenez has never been a massive goal scorer at any point in his career. So I don't see him as a great goal scoring option, but I like that team and the way they attack. So yeah. I guess I would go Jimenez. I mean, partially maybe the tiebreaker is just, again, that you can't play Ings in game week 6.
Yeah, at the moment, it does feel like a bit of a coin flip. I did feel like Danny Ings looked up for it against Brighton. I think he's finding something there at Southampton.
Yeah. All right. Final question, lightning round. Berkey says, is Shane Duffy a must have?
So I spent all of last season's podcast saying I would eat my hat if Shane Duffy didn't score by the end of the season, and he didn't manage to score. And here he is. Like Lionel Messi caliber. Yeah. Don't appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, they have great fixtures coming out, but they do play Spurs and City in the next 2. So, Brandon, let's wait until game week 8 when you and I are watching them play on Friday night in London. Yes. No, live, in Brighton, excuse me.
Live at the Amex, we'll be watching Brighton host West Ham.
Yeah. I didn't even get to my story about getting Fulham tickets, but we were going to Fulham Arsenal as well. So it's all very exciting.
It's so exciting. I think we should take a quick break, Josh, and then we can come back and do our preview of game week 6 and get out of here.
All right. Sounds good. All right, Brandon. Game week 6 is here. The Dark Lord says, Captain Aguero, Hazard, or Mane? This might be a question we have to wait on because we don't know what's going on with Aguero yet.
Yeah, it's true, and the midweek fixtures will give us another few hints as well. But my bus team, I'm on Salah right now on my bus team. So
interesting. Yeah. I mean, I guess that shouldn't be a surprise because Liverpool is home to Southampton. But Hazard has to be tempting.
Yeah, Hazard is the vice right now. I don't know. This is one where the bus team probably has no correlation to what the Friday team is going to look like.
Right.
But yeah, it's so hard to refuse Salah a home match to a soft defense.
Don't you feel like these game weeks where there's like 5 different amazing captain choices that like all of them go bust? Like there's some like rule of the game where like they all don't, I don't know. I feel like we will see what happens here, but I feel like 3 out of 4 of these great captain choices are not gonna come to pass this weekend.
Oh yeah, Jimenez hat trick against Manchester United, without a doubt. That is going to be a thing.
Yeah. I think that just Saturday and Sunday this weekend, which is kind of nice. I'm a little sick of these Monday fixtures. The games were better, maybe, but you know the problem is, you know, because the Champions League on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, you very rarely get like a huge team in those Monday games. I also feel like there's so rarely like real. This one was actually pretty good for every, you know, the 2-2 draw, you know, with some goals and penalties.
Watch the game? I mean, I have never seen so many misplaced passes in my life.
I actually didn't. Oh, you were home today. So you're home sick.
Yeah, I took a sick day. I hope my boss isn't listening to this podcast. But I did take a sick day and watched it. And it was a pretty vile affair for a 2-2 match. Maybe people feel differently, but.
Well, it does seem like we're going to see a lot of goals this weekend. I mean, Fulham Watford kick things off. That could be like a 3-3 match. You know, we got Burnley Bournemouth, Cardiff Man City. there's like a nice mix of some interesting, like it's just a fun mix of games this weekend. I'm kind of excited about it. There's no, I guess you have, I don't even know. What is the marquee match this weekend? Is it possibly Man United Wolves?
Yeah, I was just going to say the same yeah. thing. I think it is because everyone, like Wolves is the hipster pick right now and everyone. And yeah. The hipster anti-pick is Manchester United. So everyone is going to be fingers crossed, hoping that Jose gets put to the sword there.
But. Yeah, I think Burnley-Bournemouth should be an interesting match too. I mean, Burnley, we sort of keep waiting for them to come around. And Bournemouth are just in such good form right now. And like something's got to – it used to be that you went to the Turf Moor and it was like you benched your weaker strikers and midfielders, yeah. right? Because they just yeah. weren't going to get anything in that match. And now yeah. – it's hard to have that kind of faith. Yeah. I think the Arsenal Everton match on Sunday could be kind of a fun one. I don't know. I see a lot of goals in that match. I mean, it doesn't feel like Arsenal can keep a clean sheet right now. And as I said before, I'm dead certain that Richarlison's going to score.
Sure. So that Chelsea fixture being on Sunday perhaps is the case that you can make for putting the armband on Hazard just from a mental enjoyment sort of perspective. Everyone sort of does their thing on Saturday with Liverpool and City assets, and then you'll know exactly where you sit, and mm-hmm. then you queue up for that Chelsea fixture and that yeah. the Hazard.
Also sounds like the recipe for a horrible Sunday if things don't go well. But
right, sure, yeah, Hazard rested.
you might enjoy the Saturday, but the Sunday will be rough. Yeah, so it's an interesting mix of games, and the late game on Saturday is Brighton Spurs, which should also be a pretty interesting match, I think. Sort of looking forward to that one too.
Yeah, Spurs. We got a few questions about Spurs, and they're just such a dicey proposition right now. I mean, they're like a big FPL stay away, which is weird for Spurs. They haven't been like that for ages.
I thought Lucas played pretty well. Should have had a goal, actually, in that Liverpool game.
He had an amazing look.
Yeah, really. And like a chance to basically credit himself. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think that I really like him a lot as value at 7.3 million, even if he ends up as an occasional rotation risk with Son. But as long as Ali's out, I think he's pretty safe. So mm-hmm. Yeah, I like Lucas a lot there. But yeah, the rest of the team, including the defense. I mean, you know, Trippier is kind of a tempting option just because he pretty locked into those set pieces right now. But God, yeah, it's really hard to recommend anybody in that defense right now.
Yeah. Okay.
Brandon, that's the pod. On your meow, that's the pod.
Yeah, pod. Great. So let's sign off. Please visit our Patreon page, patreon.com/oischeating, where you can find all sorts of cool stuff, get access to our Slack channel, join some extra leagues. We've got buttons and other swag that's upcoming.
T-shirts. You and I had a long discussion about t-shirts over our drunken. Yep. It's basically yep. a business dinner that got out of hand last Thursday.
yeah, yeah. our sample tees with the graphics on them are coming in the mail this week, so we're going to check them out. Make sure they are good enough for our Patreon subscribers, and if they are, they're going out to all you fine folks who contribute at the right tier.
Yeah, exactly. And thanks again to this week's new patrons, Michael, Sindra, Nico, Jason, Colin, Eric, Daniel, Matthew, Antonio, Mark, Sean, and Taylor. Thanks again, guys.
And thanks to our producers, Mike DiPietro, Stephen Toomey, Sam Streak, Jacob Roberts, Nick Costello, Carls Rasmus, Lean Granley, Chris Howell, Rafi Khan, Martin Savage, Rick Brailsford, Jim Payne, Adam Benjamin, Max Chamberlain, and Brian T. Don't forget to subscribe to Always Cheating on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, Acast, wherever it is that you get your podcasts. And Josh, if you were to rate Always Cheating on iTunes, what rating would you give us?
I would give it 10 stars if all 10 stars were available.
That's amazing. You could actually leave 5 stars and then write in your little text field, I would have given this 10 stars.
Right, exactly. You can also follow the podcast. You can follow us on social media. On Twitter, we're at Hail Cheaters. That's H-A-I-L Cheaters. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/alwayscheating. You can email us anytime. That's hailcheaters@gmail.com or visit the website alwayscheating.com. Well, Brandon, I have to say, even though you and I are both in our 46 of our 48-hour hangover. Mm-hmm. I feel like because we're now too old to do what we did on Saturday. We got through it. We should have a little more energy next week.
Absolutely.
For the next podcast. But thanks, everybody, for listening.
All right, guys. So watch out for breaking news midweek, and we'll see you on the social channels. Good luck in Game Week 6. Poku forever.
Cheers, Brandon. Talk to you soon.
Bye.